You are listening to an exclusive podcast on Money Control.
Women are not responsible for men's bad behavior. We are not the sex police, wrote Heidi Stevens in the Chicago Tribune after the Harvey Weinstein scandal broke in 2017, almost a year ago, and questions began to erupt about how for so long the trails of abuse could continue, and why the victims had not come out before, and why the heroines who had worked with the disgraced studio mogul had not made their misgivings public. My name is Rakesh, and on Digging Deeper with Money Control today, we explore India's brush with the Me Too movement and its possibly far-reaching impact on multiple industries and those who run them and work within them.
The Deep Dive podcast series, India's own Me Too moment.
The stories of abuse of power by powerful men in the industry, not just film industry, but industries across the board, are almost too hard to digest. But amid the groundswell of voices that we've been hearing, there is one question that a lot of people keep asking. Why did she not speak before? That question is the biggest defense that abuse apologists offer to protect the accused, putting the onus squarely on the survivor to prove her credibility, rather than following up on the accusations via checks and due process that should be in place in every workplace, but often is not. In December 2017, for example, a guerrilla artist in Los Angeles claimed responsibility for posters depicting actor Meryl Streep as an enabler of Harvey Weinstein, calling them revenge for the actor's criticism of Donald Trump. The posters showed Streep with a red stripe across her face and the text, "She knew." Though the artist was doing this self-confessedly to avenge Streep's criticism of Donald Trump, it did bring to attention the fact that while supposedly complicit female figures like Streep are called out for their silence, male colleagues escape similar scrutiny, even though, as director Peter Jackson confirmed in retrospect in 2017, that he had known about Harvey Weinstein's tendency to blacklist uncooperative heroines like Mira Sorvino and Ashley Judd. Italian-American actress Annabella Sciorra, who starred in the US TV series The Sopranos, was also one of the many victims whose lives and careers were interrupted by Weinstein. Peter Jackson had chosen to keep quiet. That silence rings a bell, because the same rule of omerta, or code of silence, has operated for far too long in Bollywood. Victim blaming is rampant, and it had worked in Weinstein's favor in the past in the context of actress Rose McGowan, who had been a rising star in the 90s but went on to become a tabloid headline after she alleged rape by Weinstein at the Sundance Film Festival. 10 years ago, former Miss India and actor Tanushree Dutta, after a traumatic incident involving Nana Patekar, had to leave films in the absence of any tangible support from any quarter. And it is Tanushree Dutta, a decade later after that incident, who started the first brushstroke of India's own Me Too tapestry. While Weinstein made his employees sign a confidentiality agreement, there seems to be an unwritten bro code that successfully ousted Tanushree from the industry, even though the attack on her car on the sets of Horn OK in 2008 was filmed and a journalist was witness to the harassment she suffered. As many articles post-Weinstein's fall pointed out, the culture of silence around abuse thrives with the help of a well-oiled machinery of enablers and facilitators who work behind the scenes to empower and protect predatory figures and to clean up after them. Because everything, in the end, is justified by the bottom line. And what is that bottom line? The economic subtext of abuse cannot be denied, because when studio heads, actors or directors bring in the money that jingles all the way from the box office to the bank, they're accorded creative control and immense power over livelihoods and careers that they can go on to make or destroy. Weinstein remained the toast of Hollywood despite his openly abusive tendencies, because he pulled off dazzling creative collaborations and turned Miramax into a dream independent studio and a money-making and award-winning machine. Regardless of where the abuser presides, a media house, a cinema studio, a set, a corporate office, or an academic nerve center, one thing is common to all Me Too stories. The abuser almost always happened to occupy a more powerful position than the survivor, and almost always had the clout to affect her career or livelihood or her life in some big or small way. That alone should tell us something about the lopsided power structures that facilitate abuse within their secretive walls. The question is, how were the abusers able to persist with their pattern of misbehavior for so long? Which brings us to the enablers that we spoke of earlier. Actor Rose McGowan has pretty much maintained the same view that Hollywood, while pretending to speak for victims and wearing black dresses and shining pins to make its support for victims and survivors known at glittering events, goes back to work the next day with the same abusers. It is only when the tide turns irrevocably and irrefutably, as in the case of Bill Cosby and Harvey Weinstein, that those who had worked and socialized with them suddenly feign surprise and refuse to associate with them any further. Meryl Streep, who worked on several films produced by Weinstein and once jokingly referred to him as God, went on to deny any knowledge of his alleged assaults. But as a news story in The Guardian reported, Harvey openly abused his power. And I quote from The Guardian, "Senior executives who worked for Harvey Weinstein at Miramax Films have described an atmosphere of psychological abuse and bullying at his film studio, enabling his behavior at the firm to go unchallenged for decades." Unquote. The exact same pattern can be seen unfolding in India now. Sexism and abuse of power is not a new occurrence in Indian film studios. A superstar accused of breaking into a film set to disrupt a shoot and intimidate his ex-girlfriend continues to work with adoring heroines and deferential directors till date. Well-connected actors have bounced back from court cases, from legal troubles, and continue to call the shots, while the heroines remain on the fringes and only occasionally become powerful enough in their own right to be able to walk out of a big film without the fear of offending anyone, like Priyanka Chopra did recently. But not every female actor that works in the industry has the power or the clout of Priyanka Chopra. Years ago, a beauty queen said on record that she was dropped from big projects after her personal life became disruptive due to another individual and she had to take a break from Bollywood and work in Hollywood for a while. Women who come from film families are relatively well protected, and that may be one of the reasons why we don't hear so much from them, but for outsiders like Radhika Apte, Richa Chaddha, Tanushree Dutta and legions of others whose stars could never shine because they were not quote-unquote cooperative, the industry can be a minefield they must learn to walk into with their guard up at all times. Just as Harvey Weinstein's success inhibited those who knew about his behavior from speaking out, in India too, women who are not as successful as their abusers are often described as merely publicity hungry. In India, it has taken a long time for the tide to turn in favor of the survivors, though it is still too early to say if it will achieve far-reaching changes. But at least, a tentative safe space for narratives to come out has been created, and social media have been in no small way responsible for this episode of The Purge. Kangana Ranaut, who enthusiastically promoted Queen along with the film's director Vikas Bell a few years ago, now says that he had made her uncomfortable during the shoot. After director Sajid Khan was accused by multiple women of sexual misconduct of a gross nature across a varied timeline, his famous family members and the larger-than-life actors who have worked with him are now giving incredulous statements to the media and saying that they're appalled by the accusations and do not condone such behavior. Paul Webster, who was the head of production at Miramax between 1995 and 1997, told The Guardian just how the reign of silence empowers abusers. To quote Paul Webster, "Miramax was absolutely a cult, the cult of Harvey. And that's how he got away with his behavior for so long. It was crude, but very effective. People became brainwashed. Some people had nervous breakdowns. People would be hired and then destroyed for no apparent reason. And then their careers and lives would be in tatters. Everything Harvey did was all about manipulation and fear. He was a massive bully. He would flatter people, get the best out of them, and then dump on them really, really hard to destroy them. It was this whole thing of breaking people down so you could build them up in your own image." Unquote. Paul Webster admitted to The Guardian that Weinstein's predatory behavior towards young women was common knowledge, but that the culture of Miramax led them to, quote-unquote, compartmentalize it. Those narratives of the Weinstein kind may be coming from thousands and thousands of miles away, but the story remains the same even here. Similar parallels can be drawn from the accounts narrated by survivors in India, where powerful editors like M.J. Akbar and C.P. Surendran, powerful directors like Subhash Ghai and Sajid Khan, and even smaller players like Rajat Kapoor and Alok Nath continue to work uninterrupted while allegedly playing psychological games with their victims and demeaning them verbally to chip at their self-belief. In the case of Alok Nath, the warfare that began on the sets of the cult serial Tara ended with the alleged rape of director Vinita Nanda, whose fault was that she had stood up and called out his behavior on her sets. Her career was derailed and she was ostracized by the television industry till now, of course, when, as we said before, the tide seems to be turning in the favor of survivors. She went on to say in her very moving and powerful account of what happened that it wasn't until the advent of social media where she could have a voice of her own that these stories could come out. The power of her cumulative momentum is beginning to show now, with Akshay Kumar stalling the shoot of Sajid Khan's Houseful 4 and Nana Patekar and Sajid himself walking out of the film as well. Aamir Khan has decided to not work in Subhash Kapoor's latest, Subhash Kapoor was accused of sexual misconduct not in 2018 but in 2014 by actress Geetika Tyagi, and then not one actor had come in her support. Even Amitabh Bachchan, who writes open letters about female agency while working in a feminist film like Pink and who refused to make any comment on the Tanushree Dutta and Nana Patekar controversy, has recently made some noise about the importance of protecting vulnerable women and children. Screenwriters Association of India has now formed an anti-sexual harassment committee to protect writers at the workplace. Multiple accounts are coming out to implicate Sanskari Aloknath, once known for his squeaky clean public image, post director Vinta Nanda's wrenching post about him. In an interview to The Week, said Vinta in response to a question as to why so many dated Me Too accounts were tumbling out now, and I quote her from The Week, "It gives me more confidence. It is informing the men that what they did and were not punished for will not be forgotten. It will come out 10, 20, 30 years later. It can even come out 50 years later. Times have changed. We should applaud all the older stories that are coming out. The men should understand that they were not spoken of during that time because it was not an enabling time for women. I have waited for this moment for 19 years, and it was a now or never moment for me." Unquote. In another significant fallout, 11 female directors in Bollywood have formed a collective and asked the film industry to show support towards victims of sexual harassment. They've shared a note on social media to say that they will no longer work with proven sexual offenders. The note, signed by Alankrita Srivastava, Gauri Shinde, Kiran Rao, Konkana Sen Sharma, Meghna Gulzar, Nandita Das, Nitya Mehra, Reema Kakti, Ruchi Narayan, Shonali Bose, and Zoya Akhtar, reads, and I quote, "As women and filmmakers, we come together to support the Me Too India movement. We are in complete solidarity with the women who have come forward with honest accounts of harassment and assault. Our respect and admiration to them as their courage has started a revolution of welcome change. We are here to spread awareness to help create a safe and equal atmosphere for all in the workplace. We have also taken a stand to not work with proven offenders. We urge all our peers in the industry to do the same." Unquote. Aftershocks of India's Me Too movement continue to rattle big names, and comic collective All India Bagchod's most prominent figure, Tanmay Bhatt, has had to step away after accusations that he knew about co-founder Gursimran Khamba's predatory behavior but remained silent. Hotstar has cancelled an AIB show as well. The independent success story of Phantom Films came to an end when founders Anurag Kashyap, director Vikramaditya Motwane, and producer Madhu Mantena could no longer look the other way as accusations against another co-founder, Vikas Bell, continued to mount. The company was dissolved recently. The Me Too movement has also caught up with the powerful men in the media, with journalist Prashant Jha stepping down recently as chief of bureau and political editor of Hindustan Times. Times of India's Hyderabad resident editor K.R. Srinivas has also had to step down. Meanwhile, as multiple media outlets reported, the Network of Women in Media in India, that is NWMI, which is an organization comprising women journalists, condemned, and I quote, "the rampant sexism and misogyny in Indian newsrooms," and demanded media organizations probe allegations and take appropriate actions. Author Chetan Bhagat has withdrawn from the Bangalore Literature Festival in the wake of multiple accusations of sexual misconduct. How powerful can the combined voice of women and male allies was evident last year when Weinstein was fired from his own company by the board following horrific allegations of harassment spanning several decades. The issue of sexual misconduct and sexism is, however, not case-specific, and Weinstein and the men being accused in India are symptomatic of a systemic illness that festers deep. The knee-jerk reaction to discredit accusers and question their motives is still common. Post the Me Too outpouring in the West in 2017, 24-year-old law student Raya Sarkar and her fellow students made an infamous list to name names of habitual abusers of power in academic circles. The fallout was instant, with many accusing her of playing with the careers of respected academics without proof. And recently, actor Kriti Sanon, who was part of Sajid Khan's Houseful 4, took to Twitter to say, and I quote, "What happens when a Me Too story of an anonymous girl comes out against someone? Do we simply believe it without even knowing who the girl is or if she even exists? How does one inspect such an incident in order to come to any conclusion? Is it fair to consider the accused guilty when the Me Too story does not come with the victim's name? Should the media carry such stories?" Unquote. According to Kriti Sanon, anonymous accounts can spoil someone's name and career. Not taking into consideration that Tanushree Dutta's open defiance in the face of sexist behavior 10 years ago resulted in her career getting spoiled and in her ouster from the industry and not of the people she accused. And that Vinta Nanda had to struggle for over 19 years after being sidelined by the industry for her interview to a paper after her assault all those years ago. Kriti also asked everyone to handle the Me Too movement responsibly and find out a lawful way forward. That statement is rather ironical in the wake of what happened in the US recently when Dr. Christine Blasey Ford, a research psychologist at Palo Alto University in Northern California, took a stand in the US Senate to accuse Supreme Court nominee and now judge Brett Kavanaugh of a brutal assault in 1982. He, of course, went on to be appointed to the highest court in the United States, and the President of the United States mocked her testimony at a loud and raucous rally. If that was the outcome for Kavanaugh, death threats and online trolling have tormented Dr. Ford ever since she made her accusations public. Geetika Tyagi's on-camera confrontation with Subhash Kapoor in 2014 did not affect his career even marginally. But then, Geetika Tyagi has disappeared from the public eye. Kriti's insistence that all women or men who want to share their Me Too stories should either come out in the open with their names and faces or file an FIR or a legal case also puts the onus of due process on survivors when it is entrenched power hegemonies that not only creates abusive power but also protects the abusers. And not surprisingly, for every sheepish apologist, there are the likes of Subhash Ghai and MJ Akbar threatening accusers with legal action. C.P. Surendran has compared 11 of his accusers as a lynch mob. And Alok Nath, who may be expelled from CINTA, which is the Cinema and Television Artists Association of India, has filed a defamation case against Vintananda. It is also important to address the culture of mockery that may be responsible in some ways for people not believing survivor stories. Be it Dr. Ford, who was mocked by President Trump, or the sexist jokes that are part of the banter on chat shows like Coffee with Karan, there has been a widespread tendency to laugh at contentious issues. A memorable line from The Guardian once said, and I quote, "In the Hollywood Dream Factory, trauma surfaces as light entertainment." In 2013, introducing the list of best supporting actress nominees at a pre-Oscars event, comedian Seth MacFarlane quipped, and I quote, "Congratulations, you five ladies no longer have to pretend to be attracted to Harvey Weinstein," unquote. Even a word like casting couch, as The Guardian said, has been reduced to a soothing euphemism and a comic punchline, even though historic horror stories abound of executives taking advantage of starlets. Shirley Temple recalled that Arthur Freed, a producer at MGM, exposed himself to her when she was 12 years old. Louis B. Mayer insisted that his protege Judy Garland sit on his lap. She was one of a number of juvenile stars at the MGM studio whose punishing schedule, she said, required amphetamines to get through the day and barbiturates to sleep at night. Ginger Rogers said that Harry Cohn, the head of Columbia, chased her around a desk making passes. Marilyn Monroe compared Hollywood to an overcrowded brothel. Joan Collins, who was warned about wolves by no less than Monroe, says she missed out on the lead part in Cleopatra because she refused to be quote-unquote nice to the head of 20th Century Fox, Buddy Adler, who also reportedly harassed a 19-year-old Rita Moreno. Proving that the blanket of silence around serial abusers is often studied, intentional, and continues to treat victims as collateral damage. Be it in film studios, media circles, or newsrooms, the ramifications of speaking out against a powerful abuser are both economic and social. Most film studios in India are headed by men, and the number of women in influential positions in corporate, media, academic positions is still woefully negligible in comparison. And that is why women and their stories are often not important enough. Years ago, Madhur Bhandarkar, accused of the casting couch syndrome, went on to make a film about the film industry called Heroine, without even openly broaching the topic. In 2011, according to a report in Bangalore Chronicle, actor Sayali Bhagat had made allegations against Amitabh Bachchan and Sajid Khan, but ended up withdrawing her statements. Nana Patekar happily joined the shoot of Houseful 4 even after Tanushree Dutta's allegations had come out, and things began to disintegrate only when the director of the film was also accused by multiple women of inexcusable conduct. It was then that Akshay Kumar took the decision to stall the shoot and another director walked in. On paper, feminism is becoming an increasingly lucrative trope, as was proven by recent films like Pink, Queen and Naam Shabana. But as multiple victim testimonies have proven, even seemingly woke men who are behind these films, like Rajat Kapoor and Vikas Bell, have allegedly misused their position to target young women. So just like there's a term in America for Republican in name only, or RINO, there should be a FINO as well, feminist in name only. Actor Saloni Chopra, who accused Sajid Khan of horrific abuse in a blog post, also said this about Vikas Bell, who made Queen arguably the definitive feminist film of our time. Quoting from that piece, People need to realize that sexism and this kind of abuse is not just physical, but also verbal, emotional, and always an abuse of power. It is shocking that we choose to live with such behavior every day and accept it as normal in our industry. A few years ago, at Anurag Kashyap's Holi party, I bumped into Vikas. It was a very overwhelming moment for me because he was one of my favorite directors. Anyone that's watched Queen and is a woman would say the same. It was an empowering film that an industry like ours desperately needed, and I had so much respect for the man for making it. We started talking and I told him more about myself when he turns and says, "You're in the wrong profession. Go become an activist or something if you want to save women. Why try to become an actress? I wouldn't hire an actress with so many opinions and things to say. Like, shut up and just smile." I was shocked that I was hearing those words from a man I consider wonderful. I asked him, "Why make a movie like Queen if this is what you really think?" And he laughed and continued, "Because you make the movies the world wants to see. It was all empowering and shit, but no one is going to hire you if you talk about women's rights and have so many opinions. Who cares? Stand and look pretty or do something else with your life. You don't need brains to be an actress." Unquote. Saloni went on to say he continued to get extremely drunk that day and ended up in a fight with the girl he arrived with inside a locked room before they broke things, and I heard him yelling and abusing, and I left soon after. The way I looked at him had changed forever. Unquote. Saloni also made an important point when she said that it's exhausting how much the system insults and abuses a woman's right to work in this industry. No wonder then, she said, in a lot of the biggest hits, the only job the actress has is to stand around and to play the love interest of every hero. That's her character description, and no one seems to have a problem with that. As the Me Too and Time's Up movements in the West have shown, the root cause of all of this problem is not enough female representation. Misrepresentation is a wonderful documentary that you should see, which talks about how representation of females and the poor light in which they're represented may well be the cause for the entitlement that a lot of men feel towards them. There was, of course, the famous case of an Indian man who was taken to court in Australia by a woman who said he was harassing her. And the defense actually went on to successfully defend him by saying that his notions of wooing a woman came from Bollywood. And in Bollywood, most of the songs that he referred to, most of the behavior he saw on screen bordered close to harassment. And he, of course, thought that was normal. A similar point was made by writer Ishan Mahindru in an article in The Print, where the rampant sexism on screen was sampled based on a study conducted at the Center for Studies in Gender and Sexuality over a course of 10 months. The study was based on 30 landmark Bollywood films, and it was found that among the total number of scenes displaying sexual relations, 74% translate into near sexual harassment. Quoting from the article, "Such acts of harassment, however, are not singular instances of a skewed male-female dynamic. Once we analyzed gender and sexuality through a host of different parameters, we saw how we systemically discourage women representation. Take something as basic as the number of credited characters at the beginning of any film. Male characters account for nearly twice as many as female characters in the credits. Try looking at the number of dialogues between the male and female protagonists, and the female protagonist only manages to cross about one-third of the total figure. More than the statistics itself, it was the very masculine nature of the dialogue itself that forced us to repeatedly pause and reflect. In Three Idiots, for example, the word balatkar, which literally means rape, is turned into a joke, trivializing the act itself. In Dabang as well, the lecherous tone of Sonu Sood's character is used to characterize him as the archetypical villain of this film, but a mere change of background score tries to romanticize similar behavior for the hero of the film, played by Salman Khan." Unquote. So it is the same vocabulary between the villain and the hero, and in both cases, women were the victims. Also, do you notice how blatantly sexist films like Kya Cool Hai Hum are considered almost normal and very funny, while films exploring female sexuality in a nuanced way like Lipstick Under My Burqa or Fire run into trouble almost all the time? The Print article reports that the data for 20 of the 30 films in the study made it clear that the expression of any form of sexuality has historically made the state a tad bit uncomfortable. Quoting from there, almost one-third of the cuts ordered by the CBFC were on sexual expression. While in Subhash Ghai's Taal, they objected to visuals of women wearing bras, in both Parinita and Rang De Basanti, the board ordered omission of scenes portraying consensual sexual relations altogether. Unquote. And think of the number of rape scenes and harassment scenes and assault scenes that you've seen in Hindi films starting from the 40s. The difference between consensual acts being represented and thought of as objectionable versus acts of violence, sexual violence against women being passed by the censor boards in the history of Indian cinema, the difference between these two numbers is staggering. It is no different in Hollywood, and The Guardian quoted a machine learning study by Google.org, and the Gina Davis Institute on Gender in Media also found that in the 100 highest grossing live action films of 2014 and 2015, men appeared on screen for twice as long as women and spoke for twice as long. Quoting from there, if the dynamic of older men and younger submissive women that greases the wheels of Hollywood production offices repeats itself on screen, it is not an accident, but the desires of the producers and directors who create these films played out on the biggest stage of all, Hollywood cinema, the world's most effective propaganda machine. And who is Hollywood trying to kid? The 52% female cinema audience, or executives who stalk starlets in their bathrobes while threatening to demolish their careers. Unquote. The account of actress Kate Sharma about Subhash Ghai allegedly kissing her for a massage is no less disturbing. And we are merely scratching the surface of this story because his first post reported, and I quote, as a second wave of Me Too allegations have taken over social media timelines in India over the past couple of weeks, a wide range of accusations, from inappropriate behavior to rape, have been leveled against public personalities from the fields of media and entertainment. First post, our sister concern, listed allegations reported on social media so far. Actor Alok Nath, rapper Babu Habi, comedian Gursimran Kamba, writer and director Utsav Chakraborty, comedian Kanan Gill, writer Chetan Bhagat, lyricist Vairamuthu, singer Kailash Kher, actor Rajat Kapoor, comedian Jiveshu Aluvalia, director Vikas Bell, actor Zulfi Syed, singer Abhijit Bhattacharya, musician Raghu Dixit, director Sajid Khan, writer actor Piyush Mishra, writer Varun Grover, comedian Aditi Mittal, actor Zain Durrani, event manager Vibhu Sharma, writer Sachin Garg, writer Kiran Nagarkar, photographer Pablo Bartholomew, editor K.R. Srinivas, retired journalist Gautam Adhikari, journalist Meghnath Bose, journalist Ramiz Sheikh, journalist Manoj Ramachandran, journalist Prashant Jha, journalist Siddharth Bhatia, journalist Mayank Jain, journalist Ayush Soni, journalist Shotadru Ojha, editor and minister M.J. Akbar, marketing expert and writer Suhail Seth, media personality and journalist Vinod Dua. And that breathless list is merely the beginning of more sad stories, which will continue to unspool to mainstream and important conversation whose time has finally come. People who are listening in might be wondering, why is a man talking about sexual harassment against women? And that, I think, is an important part of the conversation. The overwhelming feeling across many people I speak to is that the burden of providing proof for assault lies on the women. And no less than the First Lady of America, Melania Trump, whose own husband has been accused of multiple sexual assault allegations, went on to say in a recent interview to ABC that there needs to be proof. The women and the men have to come out with the proof. But as we also know about abuse and assault survivors and the psychology behind it and the neuroscience behind it, these traumatic incidents, more often than not, are locked up in a little box and hidden inside the deep recesses of the survivor's brain in order to live their lives. And the conversations that have been happening with brave women coming forward to discuss their stories that had been hitherto pushed down and suppressed is now empowering the other women to actually talk about something that happened 30 years ago. And people always ask, why didn't you speak up earlier? And you've heard all of these women talk about how they were in a position of lesser power, they needed the job, they were too scared, their careers could be derailed, their families could be smeared, their professional and personal lives were in jeopardy. So accusing anyone that they're coming out 30 years later and didn't do so 30 years ago is also simply not understanding how power works. And it is here that the male voice becomes important. It is about time that men started examining what their own behavior within these circles are. It is about time how men became participants in this conversation to take the conversation forward as to what they can do better and how they can understand this power hierarchy better and try to do their best to unlearn what has been unconsciously perhaps learned over the years as normal male behavior. And that is why male participation in this is important. Without male allies, without men coming forward to believe the women and support the women, this conversation will never be understood. It's important to remember what Jackson Katz, a well-renowned psychologist, said in his Macho Paradox, Why Some Men Hurt Women and How All Men Can Help. He goes on to describe a thought experiment that he does with his audiences, and we would do well to hear about it and do it for ourselves. He says, and I quote, I draw a line down the middle of a chalkboard, sketching a male symbol on one side and a female symbol on the other. Then I ask just the men, what steps do you guys take on a daily basis to prevent yourselves from being sexually assaulted? At first, there is kind of an awkward silence as the men try to figure out if they've been asked a trick question. The silence gives way to a smattering of nervous laughter. Occasionally, a young guy will raise his hand and say, I stay out of prison. That is typically followed by another moment of laughter before someone finally raises his hand and soberly states, nothing. I don't think about it. Then I ask women the same question. What steps do you take on a daily basis to prevent yourselves from being sexually assaulted? Women throughout the audience immediately start raising their hands. As the men sit in stunned silence, the women recount safety precautions they take as part of their daily routine. Here are some of the answers. Hold my keys as a potential weapon. Look in the back seat of the car before getting in. Carry a cell phone. Don't go jogging at night. Lock all the windows when I sleep, even on hot summer nights. Be careful not to drink too much. Don't put my drink down and come back to it. Make sure I see it being poured. Own a big dog. Carry mace or pepper spray. Have an unlisted phone number. Have a man's voice on my answering machine. Park in well-lit areas. Don't use parking garages. Don't get on elevators with only one man or with a group of men. Vary my route home from work. Watch what I wear. Don't use highway areas. Use a home alarm system. Don't wear headphones when jogging. Avoid forests or wooded areas, even in the daytime. Don't take a ground floor apartment. Go out in groups. Own a firearm. Meet men on first dates in public places. Make sure to have a car or cab fare. Don't make eye contact with men on the street. Make assertive eye contact with men on the street, etc., etc., etc. It goes on. Men don't even think about it. And it is about time we changed that. It is about time men joined the conversation and said, I did not know. It is not an unmasculine thing to say, I don't know. And it is that, this toxic masculinity, which is also at the heart of all of this. And 2018 is as good a time as any to start chipping away at it step by step. And this is clearly not a conversation that's finished. And that is precisely why we will return to the topic of Me Too and see what we can do. How men can help. How can we make our female friends feel safer? How can we chip away at the toxic masculine culture that may have inhabited our workspaces? How can we disintegrate it? How can we be part of a progressive conversation? And quite simply, how can we develop more empathy? And how we can finally do the one thing that we should have been doing for centuries now. Treat women as equals. Thank you for joining us.
This has been a Digging Deeper podcast, and you have been listening to Money Control.